Hey friends, thank you so very much for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. For years now, people have been setting up a little contest between crypto and gold, but that's like comparing a truck with an SUV. Both carry stuff and travel from A to B, but they do different jobs. Gold's job is to keep the value of your money safe and preserve its value. And since the events in Ukraine and the oil and inflation crisis, gold has done a brilliant job compared to stocks and other investments. So if you're worried about what's going on right now, and who isn't, just talk to an expert at Noble Gold about precious metals IRAs for your retirement. They'll get you straightened out on your options and hold your hand through the entire process. And this month, for any qualified IRA, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. Call 877-646-5347 right now to find out more, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com.
We need to understand that as men and women, we are sovereign men and women. I know that Brent has mentioned that before on your show. What that means is that you are akin to kings and queens. There's only one other individual that has more power than you, and that's God Almighty. So just get that straight right now, people. You are a sovereign man or woman, and it's totally fine to use this language. This is not going to put you in that camp of those sovereign citizens, because like we talked about before, that's an oxymoron. Can't happen.
Hey, guys, welcome back. Sean from SGT Report here. I hope you're having a great weekend. That was my friend James Tracy. He and Stephen Soha joined me to talk about the Internal Revenue Scam and your rights as a sovereign man or woman. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Did you know you can earn hundreds of thousands of dollars investing in crypto? And did you know if you do it right, you don't have to pay capital gains tax on it? Open a Roth crypto IRA right now with My Digital Money to take advantage of it. And when you go to retire, you will pay nothing on your capital gains. If Ethereum, Chainlink, or Solana doubles, or Bitcoin surges to a new high, you could be doubling your investments. My Digital Money's US-based phone support is always ready to answer your questions. And you know what's better? They will give you a free $50 credit if you fund your My Digital Money crypto IRA account with at least $1,000. That's right, no capital gains tax. Go to mydigitalmoney.com right now. mydigitalmoney.com. Hey friends, thanks so much for tuning in. It's fantastic to have you back. I hope you're all having a fantastic week and looking forward to the weekend. We could all use a respite from the tyranny. The winds of tyranny are blowing hard. I'm going to play a clip here in a second of Sleepy Joe saying that he was always the low man on the totem pole in Congress. He's so poor. He suffered so much. We should all have empathy and sympathy for the puppet in chief. First, let me welcome my guests, Stephen Soha. How are you, sir?
Good.
By the way, I'm in the wrong view here. I noticed that the other day. Let's go to gallery mode. James Tracy, James the Patriot on Telegram. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I do want to do a follow-up, a little bit of a conversation with you guys about the criminal IRS and that conversation that we kind of had. You guys didn't get too many words in edgewise, but with Anna Von Reitz and team. Just a follow-up, because I think it's very important. First, let me just do this, though. I've been sounding the alarm for a very, very long time that the House of Cards would eventually come down. And friends, it is coming down. Treasury bond massacre. Mortgage rates hit 5.35%, highest since 2009. Let me scroll down. It gets worse. Inflation tracker. 30-year fixed mortgage rates hit 6.875%, 2 percentage points higher than last month. For those of you who have not heeded the warning and are leveraged to the hilt with debt because you have investment properties and you're waiting for the next bigger fool, you guys are in trouble. You need to unload those homes ASAP, because there are no buyers. There are no more buyers in a land with 7% 30-year interest rates. Guys, I'm coming back to you. Your thoughts on that, the House of Cards economy we live under? I think the ultimate chips are being called in at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Sean. I mean, it's only... it's only a matter of time before it comes tumbling down, right? I mean, this, whenever you have inflated monetary systems such as this modern monetary theory, where they just keep printing and printing and printing, and just there's nothing backing it, it's just paper. So Yeah. I mean, that's the first I'd actually seen that headline of the mortgage rates up 2 percentage points. That's insane. I mean, these with gas prices in some places over $5 a gallon, in some places it's over six. I mean, how do people afford to live? I don't know.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the IRS wants their pound of flesh. We're going to talk about that in a second. If you're self-employed, if you own your own business, one of the things that has always made my blood boil is that every business transaction you engage in, your business partner is Uncle Sam. It makes my blood boil. Steven, as the brains behind Surety Bonds,
there you go.
You're a smart guy. What do you make of all of this?
I don't know. Like you said, and like James said, it's a house of cards. I mean, they can't just keep printing paper and expect that it's going to go on forever. It's just a way for them to steal everything from everybody and leave us holding the bag is really where it is. But I mean, on a positive note, people that are going to lose their homes, possession is 9/10 of the law. So, I mean, if you want to take it to that, it might be a battle, but it's possession is 9/10 of the law. So they'll have a tough time taking it from you if they try, if you know your rights. And maybe we'll talk about some of those tonight and we can help educate some people. So.
Yeah, I would just add to that, Sean, too, is make sure people are aware of where the fraud actually takes place. And one of the things that people need to know and understand is that it's illegal for a bank to lend you credit. The banks are forbidden by federal law to lend you credit. They are only allowed to lend you money. But what happens is when you apply for a mortgage or you apply for a credit card or something of that nature, 9 times out of 10, what these banks do is they just create a fictitious account and they fund that account with, say, $10,000 or whatever it is. And then in your mind, you feel like it's money. But in reality, all they did is they just punched in some numbers into a computer and away they went. So nobody ever thinks to look into that. And so you have a right as a consumer under the Disclosures Act, you have a right to be disclosed that information up front. And if they don't disclose to you, that's fraud. And as you guys know, we've been talking about this and a lot of these other people that have been pushing for election integrity and audits. You know, they say fraud vitiates everything. Well, that's true. It does. So if fraud was committed, if it wasn't disclosed to you that you weren't lent money, well, you technically don't have a creditor-debtor relationship. What you have is you have somebody who's extorting money from you. They're threatening to take your property from you too. So I know Steve can talk some more about, you know, our good buddy Alphonse and what he's done to help some of these individuals who've been raked over the coals by these criminal mortgage companies. I've got a friend of mine in here in where I live in Utah that I'm helping with this process right now. She's beside herself, afraid she's going to lose her home. And it's just these criminal organizations. They even reach out to these big law firms to intimidate people. So, Steve, maybe you can fill Sean in on what I'm talking about.
Yeah, actually, Alphonse and Brett, Randy Kelton's co-host, they helped a man who was losing his house in mortgage court. And they found, and this is probably in everybody's mortgage agreement, that the lender actually buys an insurance policy on whether or not you can pay the mortgage back. And he got all the documentation about his loan. And this might even move on to auto loans too. I don't know. I haven't looked into that. But he got all the mortgage documents and found out that they had an insurance policy on whether or not he could make his payments. Well, when he stopped making his payments, they cashed in on that insurance policy and got paid. Well, then they also tried to write it off as a tax loss. So when they found that in the documentation, they brought it up in court that, hey, this is securities fraud. So the judge ran to the settlement table pretty quick on that one. Mm-hmm. And the guy got to keep his house and got a $350,000 settlement in the process. So they just do so much. We sign so many things we don't read. Usually we're rushed through that kind of stuff. I went through the mortgage process. I'm sure both of you did too. You know, that title company is just, oh, sign here, sign here, sign here, and sign here. Don't read any of this stuff though. Don't read it. Just sign it. So one of the big problems is we don't read. And if we did read half the things we do sign and put our names on, we probably wouldn't sign it. So,
right.
But you do have remedy. So,
Well, you guys probably remember that whole show me the title movement back after the 08-09 collapse. Mm-hmm. Show me the deed to my house because of mortgage-backed securities. These banks were selling and reselling mortgages, and the titles would inevitably get lost. Nobody would be able to produce the title as these things got really rolled into Wall Street vehicles of investment and then buried in a closet. And the move to show me the title was pretty significant, but at the same time, I contacted my bank and my bank said, oh yeah, we have your title. We looked, you asked, we have it. But I wonder how many of these banks actually can produce the title. But again, it just gets to the point that the entire system is completely criminal and the house of cards is about to fall. I'll do another screen share here. I would highly, highly advise people to go listen to this interview. One of the best I've heard in a long time between Tom Luongo and my buddy Chris Marcus at Arcadia Economics. Tom lays out the entire house of cards and what it means for precious metals, gold and silver, which have been manipulated so long, price controlled, in fact, what it means because Russia has now moved against the New World Order, against the Davos Group, and is now backing the ruble with gold and oil and commodities. It's a big deal. It's a very, very important interview. You can find that over at sgtreport.com. Otherwise, I'll try to link it below. One other news item I wanted to share with you guys. Netflix shares plunge as subscribers flee. Why? Well, because they produce the most vile content imaginable, and conservatives have had quite enough. Guys, in the past few weeks, that stock has plummeted from $700+ to around $250. And I think it's got a long way to go down because they're run by a woke mob. And I think, again, James, this is all part of the Great Awakening. We've had enough. Patriots, Christians, conservatives, we have had quite enough.
You know, it's so true, Sean. I mean, look at what recently happened on Monday. I'm sure you have a link to it on your website as well. But a federal judge in the Middle District of Florida issued that the CDC, which is an unelected bureaucratic idiot in my mind, that their mask mandate is unlawful. And when you read the actual order that the judge issued, the judge cites that the CDC was using a law that was passed, I believe, in 1944, something along those lines. It was some Health and Securities Act, Federal Health and Securities Act. I'm misquoting that. I know I am. But if you go find this order, you can see that. And basically in there, it said that the CDC has guides or discretion in order to sanitize and to disinfect and things of that nature, and that the masks didn't fall under that. So the CDC had no authority, and we've all known the right. CDC does not have authority to tell you what to do, tell me what to do, tell Steve what to do, or anybody else for that matter. But they just issued this edict and people just followed it blindly. And so that was rescinded, as you heard, and just saw news about 2 hours ago that the corrupt DOJ is appealing that ruling. I would be shocked if that ruling gets overturned because it's founded in law. This judge that issued this ruling was appointed by Trump. So she's actually really young. She's only 35 years old and a sharp judge who issued this ruling. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. But it's unlikely that's going to get overturned.
Yeah, let me do a screen share. I agree with you. I was talking about this with my wife tonight. CDC asks DOJ to appeal lifting of mask mandate to protect public health. Quote, CDC believes this is a lawful order, well within the CDC's legal authority to protect public health, the agency stated. I said to my wife, can you even imagine how this is going to blow up in their faces if they try to reverse this? People have had quite enough. Again, all the videos of people on airplanes and the pilots announcing this decision, people take off the masks and cheer.
Yeah.
Anyone with two brain cells to rub together is done with this World Economic Forum Davos BS. We are done, done. And I said to my wife, how does the CDC and the criminal Biden administration possibly think this is a smart path to continue to go down? People hate them in the polls. I mean, the polling data is so negative. I don't think we've ever seen more negative polling data as it relates to the puppet in chief, who literally can't get anybody to show up at his events again. But we're told he got 81 million votes. You guys will love this. Let's take a look. So this demon from the pits of hell had the nerve to say this at a little gymnasium symposium thing. He showed up and maybe 50 people came to listen. Here's what he had to say about his years in Congress and his service to the American people.
You heard it 1,000 times from me that we're going to build an economy around you. I'm so tired of trickle down economics. And I never found that trickle down on top of my head very much. I was listed. I had the great pleasure of being listed as the poorest man in Congress for 36 years. I still had making a hell of a lot more money than anybody else because I was getting a senator's salary.
He is such a demonic entity. And I literally, when I watched this earlier today, by the way, Joffro over on Twitter said, so $80,000 a month from your son? Don't forget about the $1.5 billion from China. Is that where the 10% for the big guy came in? This demon is going to burn in the pits of hell because he literally is a demonic figure who is in the pocket of the World Economic Forum, the Davos elite, and Klaus Schwab. And, oh, by the way, when he says he wants to build the infrastructure for you, you guys will love this. Take a look at who he was talking to. A bunch of old people for the most part and a bunch of empty seats.
Oh, gosh.
But don't worry. He got 81 million votes. So the Republic is alive and well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I hadn't seen that. That's fantastic. I mean, I saw the interview where the bird took a crap on him. That was awesome.
Yeah.
You want to talk about karma.
Yeah, absolutely. Karma. 100% karma.
Oh,
let me ask you guys this, and I want to just sort of not so much clear the record, but just let's get back on the record with what we think is lawful. I have made the statement now in numerous interviews. How in the world are we the people expected to continue to pay federal income tax to a federal illegitimate government, which is no longer doing the bidding of the people, by the people, or for the people? Famously, a really smart guy recently said, it is a government of the retarded, for the retarded, by the retarded. Why on earth would we continue to pay in to a criminal government that prints the stuff out of thin air? I want to cover this topic again because many people heard my interview with Payman Matahide, the other one we did with Anna Von Wright. Mm-hmm. I've since talked to Brent Johnson, and we've talked about this a little bit on the record. And I continue to hear pretty much a different approach to take to opt out of your taxes from each and every one of these people. Nobody seems to be on the same page, which doesn't give me a lot of confidence to move forward just yet. Who wants to field the first part? Who wants to take that and run with it?
Go ahead, James. You've been digging into this quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, Sean, as you know, you and I have talked about this at length. So you have to understand exactly what type of an organization the IRS is. I mean, it's an Internal Revenue Service. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It was chartered with the 16th Amendment, but at the end of the day, you got to understand that the 16th Amendment didn't grant Congress any additional taxing authority. So the Constitution grants Congress the authority to lay two types of taxes, a direct tax or an apportioned tax. So direct taxes are unconstitutional and against the law on individuals. And when I say individuals, I mean men and women. That's what I'm talking about when I say individuals, not the legal definition of individuals. So the only thing that's lawful, according to the Constitution, is an apportioned tax, meaning, so you have 50 states, all 50 states would be paying an equal tax, but that's not the way our tax system works. So there's certain percentages, and depending on the amount of money that you make, put you in a different income bracket and so on and so forth. And so I guess that begs the question, how is what we have today considered legal and lawful? I guess that's the question that you're asking, right, Sean?
Yeah, that's right. In Payman Matahide, I said in our interview that unless you are an employee of the federal government or live in the District of Columbia, you are not required to pay federal income tax. You may volunteer to do so, but you're not required to do so. But then I did a follow-up call off the record with Brent Johnson, who's traveling and has bad internet and actually couldn't do a Zoom call. So I gave him my cell phone. And he said, well, yes, that's true. But the IRS will come after you because they don't care about the law and they don't care what you present right. to them, and they will put a lien on your house. So before you go down that path, you need to put your house in a private trust, dot, dot, dot. Now, that's not something Paymon shared with me. So yeah. I just don't want people to get in trouble and find themselves in all sorts of legal trouble with the IRS that may not be lawful. But when the IRS comes and puts a lien on your house, well, that's a real action, whether lawful or unlawful.
Well, so. And to back that up real quick too, the IRS cannot put a lien on your house without a court order to do so. So even if they want to put a lien on your property, let's say that they do. Let's say they do put a lien on your property. Well, what they just did is they just committed a crime, which is punishable. So you can ask Alphonse this. I mean, he's dealing with city morons putting liens. Actually, it was wasn't it the township attorney, Steve, that was creating liens out of thin air and just attaching them to his property? Yeah, that's a violation of due process.
He doesn't work there anymore, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah, he got him fired. It's a great story.
Steve did?
No,
Alphonse did.
Alphonse got this attorney fired for who was just creating liens out of thin air. I mean, so think of it this way, Sean, and this is the most basic, simplest form. And I learned this from Alphonse, who learned this from Steve Emerson down in Florida. And Steve says this: if I can't do it to you, you can't do it to me. Pretty simple. So if I can't write a piece of paper that says lien at the top of it and go file it at my county recorder's office and make that lien stick, if I can't do that, then the IRS can't do it to me willy-nilly. They have no additional power or authorities that anybody else does. This is why Steve and I and Alphonse and others like Randy and Brett and those other individuals, this is why we're so passionate about using the people's house for a redress of our grievances. And I'm not talking about the Capitol buildings, and I'm not talking about the state Capitol. And I could give two craps rear end about those morons sitting in Washington, D.C., who think they run this country, because they don't. It's we the people, which is why I've got the Constitution banner behind me. We the people run this country. So where we find that redress of grievances is in our courthouses. This is why I want to go back to this federal court decision that was issued on Monday and why it's such a big deal. Because one woman wrote an order, and now that order must be followed nationwide. That is the power that we the people have. See, this is what people don't understand, is that if you take an issue to the court and you petition the court for an order and they give you a court order, and the individual that you're seeking that court order against doesn't do what you want them to do or what the court orders them to do, then guess what? You can have them thrown in jail. That's contempt of court, and they can be thrown in prison. That's the power that we the people have. And this is why Dr. Graves of the How to Win in Court course is so passionate, because he wants people to know and understand that if we want to see changes in our country for the better, we seek those changes through court orders. I mean, think of it this way, Sean. What happened with the Roe v. Wade case back in the 70s? It's a very popular case. Most people know about it. It's the abortion case. So what ended up happening? Well, up until that time, abortion was illegal. And then somebody took it upon themselves. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not for abortion. Okay. I'm not saying that I am. What I'm saying is that somebody had an issue with that law. They took it to the court. Eventually, it made it to the court in the highest land. And those justices at the time, who I don't agree with, said, yeah, you're right. You have the right to do this. I don't agree with it, but that's the law of the land now. Now, if we want to get that law changed, it's going to have to go back through the courts. This is the power that we the people have. So to your point, your original question, what happens if you don't do this and the IRS places a lien on me? Well, guess what? You can't sue the IRS directly, but guess who you can sue? That man or woman who put their name on the piece of paper. Because they can only act within their authority and the scope that's been prescribed to them by Congress. And if they step outside of that, their qualified immunity is off the table, and they are now personally liable. And you can sue them personally in a federal district court. You don't have to go to the tax court. You can sue them in a federal district court. And then they're going to have to go to that federal judge and say, judge, I can put liens on people's houses because I'm an IRS tax collector. And that judge is going to go, not without a court order. Am I right?
Not without due process of law. That's why it's in two amendments. It's identical in two amendments, the 5th and the 14th. No one shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Correct. And it says it in your state constitution too. It should say something similar. Yeah. Like in Ohio, it says we have the right to acquire, possess, and defend property, and that right is to be held inviolate. That means forever.
Invalid.
So, yep. I mean, it's just, it's written there, and yeah, they don't want to follow it, but, and James said take him to a federal court and make a federal judge answer it. Why not?
Yeah. So,
yeah, we just lost Steve's audio. Steve, can you hear me?
Yeah, Steve, we lost your audio. I don't think he can hear us.
Yeah, that's really weird.
That is weird. Each Steve, we lost you.
Oh,
you're back.
Okay. Did you get the part about the state?
We heard the state property, but then we lost you after that.
Okay. So if that IRS agent, if he's a federal agent and they're beating up on you, instead of dragging him into a federal court, take him into a state court. Let the state beat up on him. Yep. So as Alphonse and Steve say, if it's a federal problem, then use the state courts. And if it's a state problem, use the feds. Use them against each other. They don't play well together. They don't like each other. And you have every right to do so. So, I mean, there's different remedies you have. It's just which one you want to do. And the thing is, the system is so full of holes. There's a lot of different things that work, Sean. It's like Swiss cheese. This is just the avenue we choose. And I don't know if we want to talk.
Oh, we just lost you again.
Can't hear you, Steve. Can't hear you.
I think he's got a bad internet connection.
Lost you again, Steve.
Damn it. Terrible. What is up with this? This laptop is terrible.
You know what? You might want to cut out your video feed and just see if it works better that way.
Yeah. Let's see. All right. Let's see. So what part did you hear there?
we heard the state court and the let them beat up on each other. And then that's about the last part we heard.
Oh, okay. The only thing, other thing I was going to say is about the American state national thing.
Oh,
And just the questions I have about it that nobody seems to be able to answer. I just want to know what it does, how it does it, and what evidence do they have to support that it does work? Because you, I, Alphonse, Randy, Brett, a bunch of us have a lot of evidence that it doesn't do what they claim it does.
Yeah, and that's...
Lost his audio again.
Yeah, this is weird.
Well, go ahead, James. Maybe run with that. American State National.
Yeah. So I hope I was abundantly clear the last time we had that marathon interview. To each their own. You want to go do that thing, by all means, I'm not going to stop you. I just, for one, just like Steve has said, I have yet to see any evidence that it works. I've yet to be able to see any court decisions or anything that those individuals say that it gets upheld in a court of law. That's where I'm coming from. So like I said before, like, let's say you go and you correct your status, whatever that means, you know, so now you're no longer considered a U.S. citizen as they talk about. And so you're driving in your car down the road and you get pulled over by a police officer for whatever reason. And you don't have a license plate. You don't have a driver's license. You don't have any of these things. The first thing that cop's going to do is he's going to slap handcuffs on you. And then he's going to haul you off into jail. And then you're going to have a big fight in court. Now, you could probably come out on top on court because there are court decisions, Supreme Court decisions, that say you have a right to travel in your personal property, your car. You have a right to do those things. But the issue is, that's not the issue I have. The issue I have is with that, I don't want to be harassed. I don't want to be pulled over every 2 or 3 miles by a different police officer or a sheriff's deputy or a highway patrolman or a state trooper or whomever.
Well, and you and I,
left alone.
Yeah, we talked about this on the call, and the point I wanted to make, and I don't know that I made it all that well, but I don't want to get bogged down on that. Like, correct your status so you no longer have to have a license to drive a car or put plates on your car. That's not the hill I want to die on.
I agree.
That's not a big enough topic for me. But what I think makes some sense, and again, I'm taking little pieces from what everyone has told me, Paymon, Anna, Brent Johnson, I should talk to Steve Emerson. Alphonse I've talked to, but one of the things I take away from Anna that does make sense to me is this whole idea of corporate fiction and our birth certificates. We were born into maritime law, and what we need to do is get our feet back on the soil, correct our status, so that we are now back on the law of the land. And to some degree, that makes sense to me as it pertains to this whole opting out idea, as it pertains to the IRS. That to me would be one sensible component. In addition to that would be the things that you've recommended, James, that we've talked about. In addition to that might be hiring somebody like Paymon to represent you should you get letters from the IRS. I mean, I think there's a bunch of different things I'm taking from everybody. But again, I'm still trying to build the best possible narrative that we can lawfully stop paying these people taxes that we don't owe.
Yeah, so let's tackle that one real quick. First and foremost, are you required to pay taxes? Is there a law that requires you to pay taxes? The short answer to that is no, there is not. Like Steve mentioned, read your state constitution. Oftentimes the state constitution is more powerful than the federal constitution. But like in my state, for example, it has language very similar to what Steve said, is that every man and woman in the state has a right to life, liberty, and property. And you have a right to acquire property. So if it's a right cannot be taxed. So there's certain nuances for how those things can be taxed. And it goes back to some of the things that Anna said. You know, if you work for a federal government, yeah, then yes, your income can be taxed. If you live within the 10 square miles of Washington, D.C., then yeah, technically that applies to you. But for all of us others, we live in the sovereign states. So that makes us citizens of these sovereign states. So as citizens of sovereign states, our rights cannot be taxed. So the only way that we can be taxed is if we voluntarily join the system. And the issue is nobody ever bothered to tell us this is voluntary. They've done a really good job, I should say a great job, of confusing the heck out of people and making them think you have to do this. It's like all my life that I've grown up, it's like, oh, you just pay taxes. I mean, you've mentioned this before, Sean, you see it in Hollywood, right? There's that great show on AMC. I think it's Better Call Saul. He says that there's only two things guaranteed in life, death and taxes. Why? I mean, our nation was founded over the fact that people felt like they were being taxed to the hilt unfairly. So I've always wondered that question. Why do I have to pay this? So when you look into the law, when you start reading the law, you realize, oh, wait a second. I don't think I have to. So I wonder if I can share my screen, Sean. I think you got to give me.
Yeah, let's do that. Power. I'll let you do so.
I want to show you a document that was written by Steve Emerson. And this is one that you can absolutely use and should use should you ever have any issues with the IRS. It looks like I might need to open my system preferences. Oh, I got to love this.
Well, take your time. One thing I just wanted to clarify, though, is that, you know, it's not just as easy as don't file anymore, stop filing. I think you would agree with Brent Johnson and some of the advice you gave me is that you first need to rescind your signature on your Social Security. You need to send the Social Security people a letter that says, I'm done. So then you're relinquishing your Social Security number. And as Brent Johnson told me, just so you know, you'll never be able to get a loan from a bank again. I mean, you'll never get Social Security payments, obviously. You're opting out. And so I just want people to know this is a really big decision. And I'm just trying to dot more I's and cross more T's. Because again, I'm not getting the full picture from any one person.
Well, and I may have a different solution to that. I'm still doing some more research on that. So we can do another follow-up later on about that. But real quick, I apologize. I've got to leave and then come right back in order for this screen share to work. But this is important. I want you guys to see this. So I'll be right back.
Okay. So while he's resetting his preferences, what is your take on this whole opting out thing? I mean, it's just not as easy as I think some people have made it out to be. I guess what I'm saying is that I respect Paymon, enjoyed our conversation. I respect Anavon Rights. I respect what Brent Johnson told me, but all three people are telling me slightly different ways to go about it.
It might be. It's really just going to take trying it out. Like the way that James and I, and like what that document he's going to show that Steve wrote. I mean, you can modify that just to send it to the IRS agent themselves and be like, "Hey, prove that I am what this says you that you claim I am a taxpayer," and according to your definitions, and they're not going to be able to do it. A mutual friend of mine, James, is Brandon Sibley down in Louisiana, and he did this similar thing. He just, once he figured he had a good grasp of tax code, he sent him a notice, just a regular letter, and the only thing they ever sent back was a consent to tax him. They never sent him because he says, okay, this is what your definition says. I'm a man. That's not me. Prove where I have to pay you this. And they just keep saying.
Yeah, they've come back and forth a few times saying, well, we're going to need to research our own tax code more. Right. The IRS comes back and says, we have to research the code further in order to be able to give you an answer. That's how ridiculous this is. So this is the document here, Sean, that Steve is referring to. This document was written by Steve Emerson, who, by the way, is a fantastic individual. If you can get him on your show, you absolutely have to, because he has helped more people than I care to know. Everything that I've learned through Alphonse, who's learned it through him, and so on and so forth. But he wrote this document here, and I just want people to see how simple this document is. All this is that if you're issued any type of a discrepancy from the IRS, if you get a letter from the IRS that says, well, hey, according to our records, you owe this, or you should have done this, you can petition the United States Tax Court at this address. You would put the information that's on the letter here, and you can petition to have the court give you some clarity. So really what this document says is that this is a fictitious individual, this Harry O'Donnell. And as a petitioner, you're coming as, this is something else I want to point out, as one of the sovereign people of the Union State of California. We need to understand that as men and women, we are sovereign men and women. I know that Brent has mentioned that before on your show. What that means is that you are akin to kings and queens. There's only one other individual that has more power than you, and that's God Almighty. So just get that straight right now, people. You are a sovereign man or woman, and it's totally fine to use this language. This is not going to put you in that camp of those sovereign citizens, because like we talked about before, that's an oxymoron. Can't happen.
Friends, thank you so very much for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast. This is a perfect time for a quick break. For years now, people have been setting up a little contest between crypto and gold, but that's like comparing a truck with an SUV. Both carry stuff and travel from A to B, but they do different jobs. Gold's job is to keep the value of your money safe and preserve its value. And since the events in Ukraine and the oil and inflation crisis, gold has done a brilliant job compared to stocks and other investments. So if you're worried about what's going on right now, and who isn't, just talk to an expert at Noble Gold about precious metals IRAs for your retirement. They'll get you straightened out on your options and hold your hand through the entire process. And this month, for any qualified IRA, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. Call 877-646-5347 right now to find out more, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com.
So you're petitioning the IRS, you're claiming all your rights known and unknown, and you're waiving none, and we want assistance from this court. So here's what we're asking for. Pursuant to this rule, we want to know this. Number one, we filed this petition in accordance with this rule, and we are disputing this notice of deficiency for this tax year for these amounts. And again, you would change these amounts out here for whatever this notice is, comes from the IRS. Here's your statements of fact. We're seeking a validation that is competent evidence and strict proof that the respondent, which is the commissioner of the IRS, is truly acting within the scope of his or her fiduciary relationship to the petitioner. So there's that word scope. I mentioned that. Second, we have no knowledge of any known duty or legal responsibility to perform any obligations with the respondent. So here's the clarification of the following issue. We want to know, what is the definition of taxpayer? Taxpayer defined. Okay, that's what we want to know. So when we look under the federal code, It appears to define taxpayer and or person to be some individual officer or employee of a trust, estate, partnership, association, company, or corporation under a duty to perform or subject to any internal revenue tax. So now I ask you, Sean, does that fit you? Are you one of those people?
Well, actually, I need to clarify that because you and I had a conversation the other day about S-corps, about muddying the waters if you formed an S-corp. So riddle me that. I think it's a little different if you just are operating under your social security number, but if you formed an LLC or an S-corp, maybe it's a different deal, huh?
I think you have to look at it this way. Look at any communication that you've gotten from the IRS and see, does it talk, do they address you as taxpayer right here? Or do they address you as something else? If they address you as taxpayer or person, because your S-corp would also have to be all of these things or none of these things, just so you're aware. So when you look further under the Code of Federal Regulations, it says taxpayer has the same meaning as the term person as defined in Section 7701, meaning an individual, trust, estate, partnership, association, or corporation, rather than the meaning of the term taxpayer is defined in 7701A14, any person subject to tax. So when you go further, it says the term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, a trust, estate, partnership, association, company, or corporation. And the term taxpayer means any person subject to any internal revenue tax. So the way that I read that, and this is how I would do your situation for any of those of you who are self-employed that have a sub-S corporation or even an LLC for that matter, I would send this letter to the IRS and say, I'm still confused. I need clarification of these issues. Help me understand how it is that because I formed my business that I am subject to this. Now, it could be that there could be something I'm missing there. I don't know. I'm not a tax expert, thankfully. But what I can tell you is that I can read the law. And I can read what it says, and I can read by their own definitions, that is not me. And if you say it is, well, the burden of proof is on you to prove it. So when you go a little further here, here's a court decision that we've used, a few of them actually. It says in common usage, the term person does not include the sovereign, and statutes employing the word are ordinarily construed to exclude it. This is why we use that word sovereign. So this was from the U.S. versus United Mine Workers and U.S. v. Cooper. The word person in legal terminology is perceived as a general word which normally includes in its scope a variety of entities other than human beings. That is huge, people. Mm-hmm. Reasonable compensation for labor or services rendered is not profit. So you need to understand this. So what are we asking this? So if you were to send this document into this tax court, what are we asking? Well, we want to know. Provide us with copies of any and all official and supporting documents in your possession procured in accordance with the United States Internal Revenue Code, including but not limited to numeric and or alphanumeric sections and subsections of said code, case law, and so on and so forth, that petitioner, in this case, I would put your name. So Sean, going back to you, I would put your name here. Because ultimately, the purpose of a sub-S corporation is the tax burden gets shifted from the corporation down to you. But down to you, it gets a lower tax burden, supposedly. So I would put your name here and says, where's my duty to perform any obligations with the IRS commissioner? So it says here, a person liable for a tax is a person subject to a tax and comes squarely within the definition of a taxpayer in the statute. The definition of income approved by this court is the gain derived from capital, from labor, or from both combined, provided it be understood to include profits gained through sale or conversion of capital assets. So go back to your question with the sub-S corporation. By that definition there from this court decision in 1920, you are only to be taxed on your profits. So now I would say to you, your labor is not taxable. So now you have to decide what that difference is. So ultimately, we're asking them to prove it. We demand that you respond to this, pursuant to this, and give a clear and concise statement of every ground together with facts and support thereof on which the commissioner relies, and to provide strict proof that this Harry O'Donner is a taxpayer and or person as defined by these codes. And that's it. Every single individual that has sent this document here, they've never gotten a coherent answer back from the IRS because they can't answer it. And they know that.
And if that's the case, then what is the next step to take?
The next step is that you send that letter. And then here's the thing, too, is you don't ever not respond to a letter from the IRS, because in their minds, silence is acquiescence. So you always have to rebut anything they send you. And you do that through correspondence here. It's real simple. You get a letter from the IRS that says, hey, according to our records, you owe this, 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 and this, and this. And you go back to them and say, well, according to my records, I owe you nothing because I am not a taxpayer by these definitions here, here, and here, and here. Here's my affidavit in support of that. Where's your strict proof that says that I'm a taxpayer? Prove it.
Okay.
Because that's, at the end of the day, everything comes down to provable facts and evidence. Because ultimately, if you have to take this into court, whoever has the provable facts and evidence to back them up are going to win. And that's the truth. I'm in a situation right now where my opposing counsel is trying to assert facts that she cannot prove. And I'm calling her out on it. And I'm saying, okay, you want to say that this is real? Then prove it. Put the evidence into the case. And she has yet to do so. And so ultimately we're going to prevail because of that. The rules are very clear. These people don't even follow their own rules.
Well, let me ask you this, and Steve, jump in anytime. Where do you draw the line between labor and profit? I'll give you an example. There's some pretty big YouTubers that make, I'm sure, a boatload with their selling of merchandise. I've never sold merch, but, you know, I don't have a problem with people who do. Clearly, when you sell merchandise, you would be profiting with a certain margin on the sale of that hat or T-shirt. Of course, you put labor into building that part of the business. Where do you draw the line between labor and profit? I mean, as it pertains to this conversation, where do you even begin to draw the line?
Well, we'd have to start looking at some case law and see what we can find as far as that goes. Because, I mean, I'm looking at some right now. The one that that James quotes is defines labor as property, and the most sacred kind of property is Butcher's Union Company versus Crescent City in 1883. And it says that among these unalienable rights as proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence is the right of men to pursue their happiness, by which is meant the right any lawful business or vocation in any manner not inconsistent with the equal rights of others, which may increase their prosperity or develop their faculties so as to give them their highest enjoyment. It has been well said that the property which every man has is his own labor, as it is the original foundation of all other property. So it is the most sacred and inviolable. So, I mean, it's case law. There's got to be case law in there that's going to define what that is. And despite what people think, they're going to tell you case law is not law. It absolutely is law. It's because when somebody writes something on paper, it only exists as a law until it's contested. So, I mean, you see these executive orders and these laws overturned all the time. It's because somebody says, hey, I got a grievance with this. I have a real problem with this. It goes against the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. And until it's brought to a court and they hear the matter and have.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to lose Steve's audio again, and that's too bad because I value what you're having to say there, Steve. James, jump in.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's absolutely right. I mean, going back to what I said earlier, where I cannot write something down on a piece of paper and make it apply to you, Sean, but I can say it does, and until you hold up your hand and say, well, hold on a second, I don't agree with that. Let's take this to a third-party individual, i.e. a judge, or a jury, and let's see if they can settle this dispute for us, which is what we see. And Steve's absolutely right. So when you have to ask these questions, okay, what is defined as labor? I mean, I mentioned this last time in our interview with Anna von Reitz and with Paul from Michigan. Words have meaning. People need to understand that what everyday speak, you know, what we're talking about here today may not mean the same thing in a lawful or a legal document. It's just like the term person, right? If I was to ask Joe Blow on the street, say, hey, what's your definition of person? They'd probably go, another man or another woman. Okay. They're not even thinking corporation, bankruptcy trust organization. They're not thinking things like that. That's because these words have been convoluted, have been changed to incorporate these things in order to fit the tax code.
Right.
Not the other way around. So to answer your question, you know, where is that definition? That's a personal question. I mean, I'm telling you right now, for me, if I'm self-employed, and let's say, for example, I'm just throwing out a hypothetical there. Let's say, for example, I'm paid $25 an hour and I work 8 hours in the day. Well, that all of that is my labor. By the definition, it's not taxable. I'm only to be taxed on my profits. Well, I didn't make any profit. That's my labor. So you go back to your other question, right? You say, what about if you're selling merchandise? So say you're selling t-shirts. So, you know, you have your hard fixed cost for the t-shirt. So let's say you're selling a t-shirt for $20 and it costs you $10 to purchase that shirt. So you have a $10 margin there. Then you got to tack on everything else, you know, your hosting services, your shipping costs and things of that. So you have your hard fixed costs. Let's say it comes out to $15. So there's only quote unquote $5 of profit. Well, what about your labor? Where's that factored into that? In my view, that $5 is your labor. Mm-hmm. So you went back and you show a $0 profit. That's how you do that. So if you want to continue to run that sub S corporation, you just show massive losses. Right. My labor costs are through the roof, IRS. So I have no legal or no tax obligation to you because I didn't bring in enough to offset my labor costs. If that makes sense. That's kind of what I think you're what we're talking about there.
Okay. Well, the reason I think this is a valuable conversation is not just because people no longer want to pay taxes to a criminal government. That's just one aspect of it. I think the bigger picture here is what you guys are saying regarding laws, things that are written down on paper that infringe on our human rights, on our natural rights, on our God-given sovereignty and rights. And I'll give you an example. These criminal, out-of-control, satanic Democrats in some states are now moving toward the idea that it will be lawful, not illegal, or punishable by jail time. If you as a mother decide to stop feeding your baby and it dies within 28 days of birth, that will be considered A-OK. Okay, that is so far down the road of Sodom and Gomorrah that it defies any logical person's ability to process that as even being possible in the United States of America, a country that is supposed to be by and for we the people. You have it right there behind you, James. We the people. So I think the conversation is important, even if you take the IRS conversation out of this, because as I said, if these demons take power, and they did take power. They stole it. Mm-hmm. If they take power, and we know how corrupt they are, what is to stop them from issuing laws like in the days of Moloch, you must sacrifice your firstborn son? It sounds crazy, but they're trying to legalize pedophilia right now as we speak. They're trying to legalize murder of babies up to 28 days after birth as we speak. So again, this is a slippery slope into absolute hell on earth.
No, you're getting no argument from me on that one. And I'm sure Steve would be, would agree there too. It absolutely is. That's murder. Okay. I'm sorry. As soon as there's a heartbeat, that's a human being. That's a life.
But the point is we need to know how to attack these unlawful laws. I mean, these are not even things that ought to be considered in a state legislature.
They shouldn't be. And so the problem that people have is they think, well, gosh, we elected these folks, and this is what we got. We got to get them out of office. Well, that's not true. Any law can be challenged, and I'll give you an example. I wouldn't be quite as crazy as what these people are considering here with murdering infants. But I have a friend of mine here in Utah that I'm helping who was charged with criminal trespass on school property, and he was given a notice not to do so. He had a need where he had to go pick up his son from school. His wife wasn't able to help out, so he had to go pick up his son. Went into the school, picked him up, walked out. No incident. No one was hurt by him being there. I mean, I'm not going to make this story really long, but at the end of the day, just so happened he's walking out and the head of the security sees him, calls the police, and the police gives him a ticket. Okay. So we're fighting this right now We went through that whole administrative court that we talked about last time with Anna von Reitz and Paul. We don't, that's a conversation for another day. But we appealed that decision into a district court in Utah. And we filed a constitutional challenge to that statute. And basically we're saying this statute's unconstitutional because of this, 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 and this. And I found supporting case law using American jurisprudence, which is, for those of you who don't know, American jurisprudence is basic. This is gospel according to the courts. But this is the way the courts see these types of situations. And under the trespass, I found a decision from 1980 or 81 in the Supreme Court in the state of Washington that said that lawful orders or notices that constitute criminal trespass are unconstitutional, because there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered when those notices are given. For example, how long is this notice in effect? What's the appeals process? Is this even a lawful order to begin with? How do I know? And so as sovereign men and women, if we're issued those, the court has said we have the legal obligation to ignore it and to go about our business, which is what this man did. And now we're challenging that. So answer your question, how do we do this? It's not, I mean, politicians are politicians. They're a dime a dozen as far as I'm concerned. I mean, if you ask Alphonse, he says, I could give two, you know what, about those people. I won't say it here. But the way we challenge that is that we get a collective of people who were upset, or even one individual that challenges the constitutionality of that statute. You have that right. You have that ability. Now, the people don't understand. They don't know how to do it, because the Bar Association, in my opinion, I'm sure Steve would agree, has corrupted our legal society. And they've taken that power away. Well, I shouldn't say they haven't taken away. They've hidden that power. But we have that power and that authority as sovereign men and women of this great country with God-granted rights. And we can challenge those laws, and we should challenge those laws. We should get a court to order or to rule on this, because the minute that judge signs that order, that law is now unconstitutional. Yeah. And especially if it's a controversial one, or one where even a criminal law, anybody who's ever been prosecuted from the beginning of that law until it was challenged, all of those prosecutions must be vacated and restitution must be paid. So that's a pretty serious thing. And so a lot of times these states are going to think twice before they prosecute people under that, rather than go through that issue there. So Steve, what did you want have to add to this?
Oh, I was thinking about the liars thing today. Did you guys ever watch that movie with Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino in the 90s, Devil's Advocate?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they pretty much have infiltrated everything. Support David Strait whatsoever, but I did see a video with him. He's talking about this whiz kid that went, I think he was like half of his class, and he was like 14, and he graduated high school, went to college, and decided to go to law school. And he was with this big Seattle law firm, and they were at a dinner with all the partners and stuff. And the guy asked him, he says, he's looking out the window, and he says, what do we really do? And he says, you see everything out there, everything, all of it has to be done by lawyers. That's what we do. We control it all. And we just didn't know how to fight them. Most of us get scared when we see a letter from a lawyer, but not anymore. I smile when I get something from a letter from a court or a lawyer or any of that stuff. Like, those guys don't scare me. Like, you guys don't even know your own rules. We can burn you down all day, week, or all day, you know, every week, because you don't know the rules, and we can hold you to it.
You know what's interesting about that? And you're right. A lot of these people who consider themselves highly educated lawyers, they don't know squat. And I'm going to provide a real world example that's outside of the realm of what we're talking about. Owen Benjamin, like me and Sargon of Akkad and many others, were booted off of Patreon without cause, without reason, without explanation, terminated against their own policies. Owen Benjamin, being the bear that he is, and God bless him for doing this, he went into arbitration with Patreon. Well, not only that, he got 70 some of his bears, his followers, people that supported him on Patreon, his patrons, to also file for arbitration against Patreon. Well, according to Patreon's own bylaws in their rules for arbitration, they didn't realize that in the state of California, they which require the arbitration, have to pick up the costs and the lawyer's fees and legal fees of everyone who enters into arbitration. And that's estimated to be north of $10,000 per person. Now, with
that's
the help
awesome.
Of Vox Day, who's a buddy of Owen Benjamin's, I think they both concocted this plan. Vox is very smart. By the way, he called me about this after I got booted, and I didn't do it, and I regret not doing it, because I think Owen Benjamin has had a great deal of success. I know that when Patreon moved, I know that Patreon amended those terms of arbitration after Owen Benjamin and all these other people did this. They tried to change the rules in the middle of the game, and the judge said, no, go. Nope, you don't get to do that. Your yes. old rules will apply. So Patreon got shot down. I think they're on the hook for perhaps millions of dollars, because Owen was suing them for $3.5 million. And I'll pay off the story with this. I don't know exactly how it played out beyond what I just described. However, Owen Benjamin just did a broadcast a week or two ago from his brand new home, and it's quite beautiful.
That's awesome.
And I think that might be Patreon money that he got, that he was Great. Awarded, because I think he won the lawsuit.
Good for him. That's what I say. Good for him. You know,
damn straight.
I'll give you another quick example is, you know, I mentioned I'm in the middle of a number of federal lawsuits that I'm litigating right now. And the opposing counsel on this big one that I'm working on, she's a 20-year veteran of the Utah bar. Matter of fact, this is what's going to make this even better. She was named the Utah Lawyer of the Year, according to the Utah bar, last year. And I caught her committing perjury on the record and filed criminal complaints against her. And she was not too happy with me. I'm not going to be getting Christmas cards from her anytime soon. And frankly, I don't care, but this is my point. She's a practicing lawyer for 20 something years. She has all these accolades and everything here, you know, everything she's done over her career. She's honored with this Utah Lawyer of the Year award. And she commits perjury in my case. This is what these people do. You see, they think that because this is how the legal society does things, and this is how other lawyers do things, and this is how we do these things, then it's okay. No, you have to scrutinize every single thing that these people do. And it's just like Steve said, and just like your friend did, call them out on it. I mean, these public servants are the worst offenders of the law. I mean, they live in this world. I'll give you two statutes that people need to memorize. Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 241 and 242, deprivation of rights and conspiracy against rights under the color of law. Public servants live in this world, and nobody ever files criminal complaints against them, but this is what they do. This is what these IRS agents do when they threaten you with communication, when they can't verify anything that they do, and they just bully you into believing that you have to do these things. It's the same thing with these attorneys, like Steve said, but I agree. When I see a lawyer write something up on a piece of paper, I go, ooh, I'm about to have some fun with this guy. They are the weakest link. People don't realize attorneys are the weakest link in the chain, and they're easily beaten. As yeah. long as you read the rules, follow the rules yourself, have the facts, have the truth and the law on your side, you can't lose.
Well, let me just say one last thing. When I talked to Vox Day and he was encouraging me to do the same thing as Owen, he said, you have a huge following. See how many people will sign on to go into arbitration because there was tortious interference that occurred between Patreon yeah. and your followers. Okay, they're the middleman. All they're supposed to do is take the monthly fee and then distribute whatever it is to you, and they keep their 10% or whatever it is. Here's the point as it relates to terrible lawyers representing Patreon. These idiots, these lawyers, then tried to sue these 70-some patrons of Owen Benjamin's. They tried to sue them for entering into arbitration, and that immediately got shot down by the judge. Now, when I talked to Vox, all I was seeing in the news is Patreon moves to sue these people that were standing with Owen. And of course, you know, I didn't want people who might do the same for me to get sued by Patreon. So I said to Vox, you know, I just don't know, and let's see how this plays out. Well, I think it's played out very, very favorably for Owen Benjamin, who deserves everything he gets from that criminal company run by Jack Conti, is the guy's name, who takes his marching orders from Media Matters for America, because mm-hmm. that was the hit piece written about so many of us on the very day that Patreon terminated our accounts without cause and without warning. Hey, Steve. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, every single one of you have a cause of action that you can take in a court of law. That's a breach of contract. Plain and simple.
That sounds like.
Oh, geez, we lost Steve again.
Steve, we lost your audio again mid-sentence.
Yeah, I lost you guys too. I lost James in the middle of his talk.
Well, let me just ask you this, because hopefully your audio will stay good here. Do you have any updates on anything you've discovered that is as effective or more effective than the surety bonds thing? I know a lot of people have run with that and had some success. Credit to you for figuring it out and sort of breaking that on my show and then other people listening and running with it. But any other information people should know to rein in out of control school boards or even teachers that are, you know, shoving their gay agenda down children's throats?
Well, I do know James has talked about criminal complaints against public officials and attorneys and stuff. You can file complaints with the state boards of education, and they'll get teachers and superintendents and principals fired. So they are serious. Like, the America is a system of checks and balances, but we've never really been taught what they are. But they are everywhere. They're in the legal system. They're in the corporate world. They're everywhere. There's an oversight for everything, and you just got to find it. The bond thing just kind of got lost in the whole insurance thing and went off on a road that I couldn't keep up with, and nor do I want to, because I always said it all had to be sorted out in the courts. And some people weren't willing to believe that. They thought they could just do it a different way and just keep going on with insurance companies and get claims and really scare these people, but it didn't work so well. That's why it's lost a lot of steam. But other things, the counties, Sean, the counties is really where we need.
Unbelievable. I'm going to have an editing nightmare here, James.
Yeah, you are. And I think I know where I can speak in for what Steve was saying. I think I know where he's going with this, but to his point, there is an administrative process for every public servant agency that exists. So going to the schools. So if you have an issue with the teacher, you can file a formal complaint with the teacher's principal, as well as with the school district, as well as with your state school board. That's three formal complaints. If it's a further up the chain, if it's with the superintendent, with the state school board, if you have knowledge that that individual committed a crime, it is your civic duty to report said crime. You can do that very easily. People aren't aware of this, but if you go to the uscourts.gov or it's us.courts.gov, one of those two, it's the federal courts website. If you go there, you can find a template for criminal complaint. You can fill that out according to the federal codes. So if they violate one of those two statutes that I mentioned earlier, you can file a criminal complaint with any judge in any federal courthouse across the country, and they're required by federal law to accept it and process it. Doesn't mean something's going to happen right away. Maybe nothing will happen. But what I do and what Steve does and what other individuals do is we take two copies. We send one to the judge that we filed it with, and we send one to the offender. We say, hey, I filed criminal complaints against you because I don't like your attitude. I mean, and Randy Kelton is a huge advocate of criminal complaints. And I love Randy because he says, I don't file criminal complaints to get my public servants arrested. He says, I love my criminal complaints like I love my grandchildren. I just want them to change their behavior. I want them to change what they're doing. So if they're doing a process or something that you don't agree with, like critical race theory or some other type of sexual garbage that they should be teaching our kids, that in most states is a crime. And if you bring it to the attention through the administrative process and nothing changes, okay, now you can escalate it. File criminal complaints, give a copy to that teacher, give a copy to the school principal, give a copy to the state superintendent, give a copy to the superintendent of the school board. File criminal complaints against them if they're complicit in all of this. At some point, somewhere along the line, that criminal complaint's gonna end up in the hands of a grand jury. And I know for a fact that criminal complaints is what ended the mask mandate, starting with the state of Texas, when Randy handed a 150-page criminal complaint over to a district attorney who was a Democrat, who was on his way out of office, who is like, I'm going to stick it to this Republican governor. I'm going to give this criminal complaint to a grand jury. The very next day, the mask mandates in Texas were gone. And now it's part of the politics process, but it achieved the outcome that he wanted. No more mask mandates.
Yeah, I love that story. Well, why don't we say our goodbyes here? Steve, I'm praying that your audio holds out long enough that you can tell us how people can find you and where to follow you.
Well, I mean, James's channel on Telegram, I'm in there. That's the Affidavits 101. I'm in Randy's channel. That's Mask Law Society and Alphonse's. I'm the Thinking Roughneck. I mean, we'll help. And there's a lot of us that are good. One quick story before we go. this is an awesome one. I got a guy in one of the Bonds for the Winds channel. He's in Iowa, and he was chasing that American State National stuff. And he really looked up to what I did. He saw me on your show and everything. And somebody's like, hey, go talk to this guy. So I got to talk to him. I was like, what value do you see in that American State National stuff? And he's like, oh, well, it gets me free. I said, does it though? And he started thinking about it, and I showed him Dr. Graves' course, and he had had some local publicity because he stood against the school board and read my speech and did some other things and started going after the Bonds. So they started coming after him with like property stuff that was on his property. Well, so he took Dr. Graves' course, and now he started filing motions and started doing what we've been telling him. And he's got the court so scared now, they just keep continuing because they can't answer his motions. So he's got him freaked out. And he's like, man, I didn't know this could be so much fun. I said, yeah, it is. Barrel. And I mean, this was just what we learned from Dr. Graves and the How to Win in Court, and what we learned from the tactics from Randy and Alphonse and Steve and these guys. And man, you can bring these guys to task.
Yeah.
If you really push it, they're just stuck in their own little bubble. They don't think anybody's ever going to do anything. But then when you start taking it above them and you get all these outside eyes in there, it really shakes them up.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it. And I think that's the way we can really fix this country at the county level, because the counties are really where it's at.
Yeah.
And maybe in the future we could have another time where we can talk about that. But that's the counties is what we need to fix. So
yeah.
That's what I got to say.
Start local. Start like Steve says, start with your local town, your city, your village, your township, wherever it is you live. Start in your county. Take care of your local stuff first. I mean, people always ask this. It's like, well, when are we ever going to see change? It's like, we're going to see change when enough men and women across this country in their local towns and their counties start sticking it to these people through the courts. And then the courts realizing, crap, we can't keep doing these shenanigans. These cities and towns and counties realize we can't keep doing these things that we've been doing for all of these years. You know, Steve Emerson, he lives down in Florida, and the county inspectors won't go within 3 miles of his house. If they do, he sues them. And he's won. I mean, this is a man who's secured multi-million dollar settlements. Because these people have violated their rights, and we have not been taught how to stand up for our rights the way the founders intended us to do. And that's what Steve is passionate about. That's what I'm passionate about. Alphonse and these others in their Telegram groups, like Steve mentioned, you can find me at Affidavits 101 on Telegram. My website's also just the same, affidavits101.com. I do the best I can. I got to be honest, since our last show, my Telegram channel has exploded. So thank you, Sean. I'm getting a lot of direct messages, and I'm doing the best I can to follow up with you. So just want to let you people know, I'm not ignoring you. I'm doing the best I can to keep up with everything. I want to help as many people as I can, but I realize I can't be the fisher for you. I need to teach you how to fish, and that's what I'm here to do. So,
yeah. Yeah. I want to learn how to be a better fisherman as it pertains to all of this stuff myself. So thanks for the education, James and Steven. Appreciate both you guys. We'll have to do this again.
Yeah. I look forward to it.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully my audio will be better next time.
Yeah. All right. Fingers crossed. All right, guys. Thanks so much. I appreciate you. Friends, thanks so much for tuning in. A special thanks to our subscribe stars and our members at sgtreport.tv. Thanks for keeping us in the fight for truth and real news, and for real news every single day for free. Visit us directly at sgtreport.com. That's the antidote to corporate propaganda and Mockingbird mainstream media lies. God bless you and your family. Bye-bye.
for individuals who are going through hard times, for individuals who are going through the ringer with the mandates, who are going through the ringer with vaccination refusal, right? If you're rooting yourself in the truth and you're rooting yourself in the regulations and what the law is, what is it that you actually really have to lose?